Well, good afternoon, everybody. It is Friday, April 24th. This is my first report to you since April 20th. That is Monday of this week. And I chose not to do a podcast on Wednesday. Instead, I communicated to you about the tragic and really senseless traffic fatality we had here in Groton that took one of our own on a late Tuesday night. So since my last podcast, we've had 5 new cases of COVID-19 for a total of 35 at Electric Boat. So we're averaging about 1 new positive case per day. And this week, we have had 1 person at Quonset Point, 1 person in New London, 1 person at Eagle Park, and 2 people in Groton who happen to live together. So these numbers are the clearest evidence that we have so far that we're not seeing sustained person-to-person transmission. And of the 35 cases at Electric Boat, 22 of those employees have already returned to work. So a few weeks back, about 3 weeks ago, we did a podcast where we conducted a conversation with our medical directors, Dr. Susan Andrews and Dr. Bob Hurley. And given the events that have occurred since then, I thought it might be appropriate for us to do that again. And so I have with me today Doc Hurley and Doc Andrews, and we're going to do a little bit of a question and answer period and hopefully provide some information that's useful to you. So Dr. Andrews, Dr. Hurley, welcome to the podcast again. It's good to have you both here. We're going to go ahead and start with Doc Andrews. Let's talk a little bit about what we're doing to control the spread of COVID-19.
First of all, thank you for having me. I just want to say that everything pretty much that we're doing here at both Groton, New London, and Quonset Point, we're really following the CDC guidelines. We're following the CDC guidelines, and we're also following all the local rules and regulations from Rhode Island and Connecticut. So it's really important to remember that we're not just kind of coming up with this, but these are all kind of big rules and regulations that are out there, and we're following them. So what are we doing? Well, we're doing a lot. It really feels very different here now than it did 6 weeks ago. Pretty much every area of the business has made some kind of change. Some of those changes are really, really obvious, and all of us would be able to see them just by looking. And some of those changes are really, really subtle, and so maybe we'll even have an opportunity to talk about some of those because you may not even know that they're happening because they're happening behind the scenes.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about that, Doc. Let's talk about first some of the obvious improvements that I think a lot of people have seen. What can you point to there?
Well, the obvious ones, I mean, everybody is wearing a mask. Again, that came down from Connecticut. It came down from the Rhode Island government. So everybody is wearing a mask. So they're wearing some kind of a facial covering, whether it's a bandana, a surgical mask, an N95. People are really, they're following the rules and they're wearing their facial coverings. Also, the social distancing. I mean, that's obvious no matter what line you're in, whether you're waiting for tools or where you are, everybody is staying 6 feet back. We're opening the access points so that we're decreasing the use of turnstiles. I mean, those are some of the really big changes also. I mean, I know Groton's on a blue and gold schedule. While a QP has adjusted the shifts and we've staggered all the breaks, we've staggered all the lunches to promote more separation of people. We have people working from home. I mean, that's definitely new and different for EB. So if you're out in the production areas, you might also see things like portable hand washing stations and an increase in hand sanitizing stations or hand sanitizing pumps on the wall. So those are all really, really obvious, and hopefully everybody's noticed those.
You know, one of the things that I learned today, and these numbers have slowly been increasing over time, is we've got now 3,600, more than 3,600 people with the capability to work from home. So while that is an obvious change that we've made, I don't know that people necessarily understand just how impactful that has been to get 3,600 of us in a position to be able to work from home. And those numbers are increasing daily, and something that I'm tracking. Let's talk next a little bit about some of the less obvious things. There's a lot going on behind the scenes, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one that really sticks out is the cleaning crews. And I put this under the less obvious because I think we have the cleaning crews coming in. They're coming in sometimes on back shifts, so you don't always see them. But the place feels cleaner than it ever has. We've got crews that also come if there's any kind of a person that we think actually was ill. So we have these kind of hot groups that come down and do specific cleaning, and then we have the groups that are just doing the general cleaning. So we've got lots of folks out there cleaning. We've brought in extra people for that. Then groups like ours. So in the medical department, you may not notice this, but we get exposed to sick people. So we see the sick people. So what are we doing? Well, we're all wearing scrubs now, which is new, and we're washing them on site so that we don't take anything home to our families, nor do we bring anything into work. The other thing that we're doing that's kind of different that you may not notice unless you're in those organizations is anything that has to do with onboarding. So the interview process, the orientation process, our training programs, they've all been adjusted to what we're calling the new normal.
Well, thanks for that perspective. And we hear a lot about in the media about, hey, we got to flatten the curve. We got to control the spread. What else can we talk about that is helping us do that? And I'm of the view that COVID is here, unfortunately. We can't necessarily prevent it, but we sure can do a lot to control it. So let's talk about that.
Well, I think we have to give EB leadership some credit, obviously. I think everything that's coming out of EB leadership at this point is not to come to work if you're sick. So you're doing podcasts, every memo. We've got signs hanging on the gates that really tell people not to come to work if you're sick. We want everybody to self-monitor. Again, don't come to work if you're sick. Everyone should be aware of what the symptoms of COVID are. So people should be checking their temperatures before they leave home. They shouldn't come to work if they have fever, cough, shortness of breath, chills, muscle pains, headache, sore throat, or loss of taste and smell. If you get to work and you were fine and then you get to work and you suddenly feel ill, well, the new message is go home. We don't want folks to be here who are sick. So if somebody gets sick at work, then the medical team, we investigate all the close contacts. We have a close contact symptom and temperature check monitoring program that we've started. We can do those at all the different facilities. And we're really looking to keep the sick people not here and to keep them separated and get people who are sick, get them healthy.
All right. Thanks, Doc. I appreciate that. So let's turn to you, Doc Hurley. So let's follow up on some of the points that we just made. We're asking a lot of questions of our folks about their exposure. Let's talk about why those questions are so important and why they're helpful.
So when a novel virus first appears on the planet, we're uncertain whether it can be sustained in human-to-human transmission. And when it does, it becomes an epidemic, and then when it spreads, becomes a pandemic. And when we look at it from a public health perspective, you look at the initial case, much like the bullseye or the center of an archery target. That initial case is the center, and the individuals that center case may infect is the next outer ring. What we do by performing investigations is we look at the first ring, the center, and all the contacts, and if need be, we use public health guidance to quarantine, socially distance, or put masks on. And so far, we've been successful in stopping the infections in that third ring.
Okay. Well, appreciate that perspective. And so I think myself, along with so many others, are really wondering, is this working? Is the approach that we're taking making a difference? How do you feel about that?
Well, here at Electric Boat, it is working because we haven't been able to demonstrate this sustained human-to-human transmission in that third ring and beyond. Obviously, there are variables outside of work that need to be considered, and that's another reason why we perform these investigations and ask the contacts. And so using the guidance from the Centers for Disease Control, in essence, we're performing what they would have anybody do, and we call it Public Health 101.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. What do you mean by Public Health 101, Doc?
So one of the first things they teach you in the School of Public Health is the story of Dr. Snow in Soho, England. And so there was a cholera epidemic in 1854. And the end of the story is that he petitioned the town officials to take the handle off the Broad Street pump. They were against it, and he had to show them what he had done. And so he performed a study where he asked people questions about where they got their groceries, where they lived, where they worshipped, and where they got their water. He was able to map the cholera homes on the Soho map, and he outlined where the people who got cholera lived during this epidemic. And you can guess, all signs pointed to a cluster right around the Broad Street pump. And when they shut the pump down, so did the epidemic. It died very quickly.
So that's why those questions are so important. It helps us identify those potential sources and where some of the cases could be coming from. Doc Andrews, anything to add there?
Well, one thing I really want to mention is that EB, I mean, we're part of our greater community. We're part of the state of Connecticut. We're part of the state of Rhode Island. So if we have success and we can help control the spread, that means our communities that we live in will also have success. Likewise, if EB does poorly with controlling the virus, well, then I think we could see that reflected in our communities. An article actually came out recently from the Rockefeller Foundation that talked about the country being resilient to the virus, and it stresses the need to test, trace, and support. And although EB isn't really doing those three, can't do those three things independently, certainly EB is helping to support its employees. And it's really, I think it's impressive that the different departments at EB have really teamed up. And they're not always the departments you would think of that would always team up. So you've got medical, you've got security, safety, facilities, finance, training, employment, legal, human resources. All those different departments are working together. And that's how come I think we're able to see some of these big changes and the changes that have happened so quickly, so that, you know, nobody's working in a vacuum. We've got communication, and the communication that's really going, you know, side to side, up and down, is kind of going in all different directions. But as you've kind of heard me say more than once now, it all comes back to the basics. And I think EB has really stressed from the beginning of the pandemic and continues to stress really the fundamental concepts of the social distancing and hand hygiene. We've added the mask requirement, which is another layer of protection. It's just, you know, it's what we're doing as a company. And so far, you know, it's been great. It's been great at a company level. But I think each person, each individual also needs to take some credit and take some ownership, because whatever each individual chooses to do or not do can really affect the whole organization and the communities we live in and the virus itself and the spread.
Well, great. Appreciate that perspective. And let's turn for a minute to, you know, kind of what's next. You know, we've got COVID here in southeastern Connecticut and in Rhode Island. You know, now we're, and I think everybody is itching a bit to get back to whatever normal is going to be in a post-COVID world. But let's talk about that. The path back to normal is kind of an interesting one to contemplate. What do you see, Doc Hurley, as the next step in this in this evolution of our COVID-19 crisis response?
Yes, well, every day we collect additional information and data, and so it guides some of our thinking as well as planning. And we're at the phase where it appears that we may be flattening the curve, and we can start thinking about a post-pandemic period. And as I see it, we have both a front-end and a back-end strategy. The front-end is what we're currently doing. We're identifying cases, we're performing surveillance, we're investigating these cases, quarantining where necessary, working with the masks, as Susan spoke about, and sometimes recommending testing for the diagnosis of COVID-19. And as we've seen from some of the numbers, we've had some people that are positive COVID-19 that have actually returned to work, having come through. But There's also a back-end strategy of, well, this is first wave of the pandemic, and for those individuals that may have had the disease, it'd be nice to know whether they have immunoglobulin G, which would signify that they have immunity. And in doing so, those individuals could very happily be returned to work.
Good. Well, I appreciate that. Let's talk a little bit about the testing, because I think you hear so much about testing, and through this process, I learned the difference between antigen testing and antibody testing. So let's talk about some of the newer testing. Doc Curley, what are you tracking?
So in the beginning, what we had was molecular testing, which required having a nasopharyngeal or oropharyngeal swab, and it was sent off, and they had to look at the outer coating of the virus itself. It was very long, laborious, and took days for the results to come back. Manufacturers and academic universities around the globe are currently developing rapid tests to make the diagnosis, and as well as to demonstrate antibodies, which would suggest immunity. So currently it's very difficult. Hopefully the new tests will allow both medical professionals and in some cases even homeowners. The LabCorp has a home test for diagnosis that is not available yet, but may be within the next several weeks. So both the diagnostic and the immune test, which have high sensitivity and specificity, do require a small drop of blood from the finger, much like a cholesterol test. Many of the individuals who are listening to this podcast have already experienced that at one of our health fairs. And much like the cholesterol test, the findings can be revealed within 5 to 15 minutes. And so this ability to rapidly diagnose disease or confirm immunity will be a blessing for all of us. And the Electric Boat Corporation is monitoring the availability of both the rapid diagnostic as well as the post-disease immunity test.
So there's a lot of discussion about, you know, testing everybody. Do we test everybody? What's your view on that, Doc Curley?
Well, we're not there yet. If you look at some of the tests, they are being declared by the FDA under an emergency utilization authorization. Some of the initial tests have been shown to be only 30% sensitive, which isn't very helpful, meaning that 70% of people may have actually had the disease, they just can't demonstrate it. So it's useful information when we get good tests, because as we watch the flattening of the pandemic curve, it's also nice to suggest that people have had the disease and then have developed immunity. From a public health perspective, we know that when 50 to 70% of all individuals have circulating antibodies, well, that constitutes herd immunity. And herd immunity means that human-to-human transmission cannot be sustained because ill people can't transmit the disease to an immune individual.
So I could see a lot of benefits of that testing long-term, and I think it would do a lot to ease people's stress and tension at this time. So let's talk a little bit about that. How does knowing who had it and who's not affect what we may end up doing here at Electric Boat?
So when several criteria are met, one, they have to be available, and two, they have to show good sensitivity and specificity. When that occurs, then we'll be able to tell whether our population has IgG antibodies to COVID. And with this information, we can estimate when we might return to a more normal way of life. Knowing our workers have recovered from the disease allows the company to make good decisions in regards to staffing. Who can safely work with one another? And some easy examples are tight and confined workspaces on the boat, in cubicles, sea trials, the machine shop, closed areas, and the like. Susan spoke about it earlier, but I too believe that the management has put us on a course which is the correct one, which is performing these initial investigations and quarantine people and instituting social distancing and masks. So in essence, we just need at this point to continue to follow, you know, core public health principles, which will slow the transmission of COVID-19.
Thanks. Doc Andrews, anything to add there?
Well, I think one thing that we really haven't talked about much is the fact that, I mean, EB has changed course quicker than I think it usually does in the past. Certainly, it's been exceedingly nimble, which is not a word I would necessarily always use to describe EB. But it really comes down to the time when we talk about our core values, and that's valuing each other, behaving with integrity and purpose, and committing to excellence. And those three core values are kind of all over what we're doing during this COVID crisis. And so I think it has, those core values have really allowed EB to provide and to protect for the employees by starting with some of the basics like the hand washing and social distancing. And now we're even expanding into the flexibility to the workforce and the working from home. So, I mean, I think that we never can forget what our mission is and our efforts to keep EB employees safe. Allow us to deliver the advantage that protects our sailors, our families, and our freedoms. And I think that's a slogan that we hear here, and it really is so important in a pandemic time.
Well, thanks for that, Doc. Appreciate that. Let me say thanks to you both for taking the time to answer the questions that our people are asking. And thanks to those of you who are listening and taking the extra time to do the things we all need to do to keep ourselves, our families, and our coworkers safe. So I want to remind you again of some of the basic precepts associated with this COVID-19 strategy that we're working on. So maintain a safe distance, 6 feet or more from the people that you work with. We're now all wearing masks while we're here at work. We need to make sure we're continuing to wash our hands with soap and use hand sanitizer. And we've done some amazing things looking to try and find hand sanitizer from interesting and unique places, including local breweries in Rhode Island, believe it or not. And most importantly, and we talked a little bit about it over the podcast, if you're sick or you're not feeling well, stay home or go home and make sure you're doing everything you can to keep each other safe. So thanks for listening. Please stay healthy and safe, and we'll talk with you again next week.